I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
So are you mad as hell and not going to take this anymore? Cultural road rage is everywhere, according to our guest this hour, from the JetBlue pilot who snaps, to the anger displayed in the Trayvon Martin killing, to presidential candidates expressing rage at the media. And he says the presidential candidate who most effectively addresses all this anger is going to win. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, April the 9th. It is not the economy. He says it's the rage, stupid. What do you say? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Lee Siegel. He is a contributor to The Daily Beast and many other publications, including Harper's, The Nation, The New Republic, and The New York Times. And he is the author of the Amazon Kindle single, Harvard is Burning. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Just an aside, I'm so out of it. An Amazon Kindle single, what is that?
Yes, it's something between 5,000 and 30,000 words, long essays, basically. And you can publish that in the manner of the old 45 records that we used to buy many years ago.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me of, a single. Yeah. Well, isn't it the economy that's behind all the rage?
Well, I think that's part of it, but I think there, without a doubt. But I think there are many more reasons. I think it's because the expectations in American life often are very high, even at a time of diminishing realities like this one. We go to the movies and the sky seems to be the limit. We're surrounded by images of wealth and glamour. And I think also the internet has made us feel that all we have to do is click on a mouse and have our desires satisfied. So we're less and less able to adapt to the routine setbacks and disappointments of everyday life.
Yeah.
I think it just makes people very angry.
And your piece wasn't so much as to why, but it was that politicians should try to channel this rage and then they'll win?
Well, of course, that's dangerous. I said that somewhat archly. I said that some politicians will channel it, some will embody it, some will address it somehow. Obviously, that's the basic quality of a demagogue, is to channel people's rage, and we certainly don't want that. But we've seen Republican candidates trying to do that, Gingrich, Santorum, in his subtler way, Romney. For almost 4 years now, we've had people begging Obama to get angry, right? He's not angry enough, that the other side is full of rage, bringing semi-automatic weapons to town hall meetings and so on and so forth. But Obama seems too cool and aloof. So I think the fact that he cannot reflect back to people their anger in some ways is harming him.
Yeah, in your piece that we found on the Daily Beast, and by the way, we have linked to our Facebook page, you talk about various categories and degrees of rage that we are experiencing in America today. Psychotic rage. Tell us about psychotic rage in the example.
Well, I had two examples. One, the very tragic, heartbreaking example of that American Army Sergeant, Robert Bales, just snapping and killing those 16 Afghan villagers. And then the other, less tragic one was the JetBlue pilot who just slipped out and went running up and down the cabin. Apparently he really exploded when they wouldn't let him back into the cabin. I guess he had lost it in the cabin and then stepped out and they wouldn't let him back in and he snapped. So I think that the George Zimmerman, killing of Trayvon Martin, I think you could say that there was perhaps an element of psychosis in Zimmerman, that he would even use a weapon like that on an unarmed person.
Mm-hmm. What do you call the anger in response to the Trayvon Martin killing, though?
Well, that's healthy, justified anger. Not all anger is bad. Not all anger is deforming. I do think that if anger becomes the general atmosphere, that's not very healthy because we can't think straight if we're angry. But we need to get angry when something that seems to be unjust happens. And certainly the anger that followed in the aftermath of that killing was heartening, wasn't it? That people just don't take these things passively.
Yeah. Another thing that people didn't take too passively, though, was another example that you brought up in the piece, Rush Limbaugh calling a woman names, a slut and a prostitute, because she favored insurance coverage of birth control.
Right. Well, people like Limbaugh have been performing rage for a long time, right? You had Limbaugh. You have him before him. You had Glenn Beck, Bill O'Reilly. Then on the other side, you had, I guess he's not around anymore, Keith Olbermann. And you have these sort of rage meisters with their rage shtick. I think they pollute the atmosphere, but I'm afraid that when they disappear, and one by one they do seem to be disappearing, that the politicians will take that over. So instead of having the angry middlemen on TV and radio, you'll have politicians taking over their function as they disappear, as the advertising dries up. But the anger that greeted Limbaugh's anger also is heartening, but it's a little bit like a kind of sickening or dizzying pas de deux. You know, there's the rage on TV, and then we get angry, and then that fuels their rage, and it's not, it's a terrible distraction, and it's inane in the end.
Yeah, talk a little bit about what you call indignant rage.
Well, that would be the rage that's healthy. I guess that's what I would call organic rage, whereas the rage of Limbaugh and people like that is more of an artificially preserved rage. Or indignant rage is the rage that followed on the killing of Trayvon Martin. It's the rage that people feel when they see Obama's, what a lot of people consider to be decent, humane legislation like healthcare, being stonewalled and being frozen, paralyzed on Capitol Hill. People get angry. We get angry in the manner of Peter Finch, whom you played at the beginning of your broadcast from Network. That's indignant rage. That's rage on principle. That's anger when we look around, we see things happening that shouldn't be happening, or we see things that shouldn't be happening, that aren't happening, that should happen, and we get angry about it. Yeah. Things aren't the way they should be.
You also mentioned in the piece the Goldman Sachs executive, Greg Smith, who was denounced his former employer Goldman Sachs for treating the clients like rubbish.
Right. That's interesting because everyone made a really big deal out of that, but it didn't come as a surprise to me that bankers do not operate like classics professors at a university. And I think that Smith also was sort of performing his rage. Why did he stay there so long, after all? I think that he, clearly, and it came out afterwards, that he was angry at having been passed over for a promotion or something like that. So there you had a kind of screen of rage, hiding the real rage underneath. And I do think it was a mountain made out of a molehill, because I never thought so much of Goldman Sachs bankers to begin with. It
wasn't
a revelation to me.
Yeah, you said nobody cared because we all expected this was going on.
Yeah, who cares? Who cares about the revelation that a bunch of Goldman Sachs bankers refer to their clients contemptuously as Muppets? What I care about is the role the banks played in 2008 in the meltdown of the economy with all their gambling, their speculation. But we should still be angry about that.
Yeah, and what about the shifting rage? This is related to the jobs and the Apple production in China. Uh-oh, I think we might have lost our guest. Well, while we reconnect with our guest, Lee Siegel, who is a contributor to The Daily Beast and is the author of this piece we are talking about, From the JetBlue Pilot to Robert Bales, Cultural Road Rage is Everywhere. And he notes, politicians take note. Channel the rage that's swirling everywhere, and success is yours. And we wonder if you agree with this or not. Do you agree that cultural road rage is everywhere? Is it on the rise? Why do you think this is? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be partly to mostly sunny. There is a slight chance of rain or snow in northern Wisconsin today. Highs will be in the upper 30s in the north to the mid-50s in the south. A freeze warning has been posted for western and central Wisconsin for tonight. Otherwise, mostly clear with widespread frost tonight. Lows, low 20s to low 30s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 19 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, April the 9th. Society runs on trust, according to Ben Maron's guest, after 3 o'clock this afternoon. And he says we have no choice but to trust that the random people, institutions, and systems we interact with will cooperate and be trustworthy. Join Ben Marins and his guest after 3 as they discuss how security can protect us from defectors and what enables us to trust strangers at the local, national, and global scale. That's At Issue with Ben Marins at its new time, starting at 3 o'clock this afternoon. We are talking with a guest who says cultural road rage is everywhere. And we're wondering why and what this means, and welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have linked to Lee Siegel's piece from the Daily Beast on our Facebook page. In it, he writes, "It's the rage, stupid, not the economy, that will decide this presidential election. Cultural road rage is everywhere. Everyone is going off on someone else, and the candidate who most effectively addresses all that anger, controlling it, expressing it, or embodying it, will win the game." So, do you agree with that, or do you have thoughts or questions about that? We have some posts on Facebook. A listener on Facebook writes, "People are angry in America, and they feel powerless, so their anger is directed at each other. The real cause of people's problems are intangible and perceived as insurmountable, so people explode. The rich and powerful love this divisiveness. As long as we are fighting each other, we are distracted from the real enemy and the cause of so much of America's problems and angst, primarily bankers." What do you make of that, Lee Siegel?
Well, I don't know if bankers are the problem, but I think that that listener is certainly correct when she or he writes that that we feel powerless. We certainly feel powerless. I think part of that powerlessness is the illusion of transparency that that democracy presents. We're told that we can affect things through our votes and so on and so forth. Obviously, we can't. I don't think there's ever been a society where there has been that kind of direct participation in government. But also, it's because of this powerlessness, this government at loggerheads. You literally have the country split right down the middle, and it creates this stasis, this inertia, and we do seem powerless to change our lot because of the people we send to Washington and the quagmire they sink into as soon as they get there.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree with the listener? The listener is hinting that this isn't necessarily poor people being mad at rich people, but that it's the people in the middle who are mad at each other. I think of what's happening right now in Wisconsin with working class people mad at public unions, who also are working class people in many cases.
That's right. And it happened here in New Jersey with sort of Christie encouraged and stoked the fires of a war against the teachers' unions, which is, of course, enraging because you go from a problem, and in this the listener was correct, a problem that was partly created by bankers. You see this rising oligarchy in the country where the wealthy and powerful seem to run everything. And because we can't get to them, somehow the scapegoats appear, and the scapegoats are working people and the unions, and it's beyond belief because you, and that's what I think makes us angry also, because what's happening defies all logic. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that in modern life, and I hope I don't expose my own party my own ideological bias, but to me it's neither liberal nor conservative that people should have unemployment benefits given to them when they lose their jobs, that universal health care should be provided. These things seem to be part of the condition of modern life, and yet we can't seem to attain them. They become ideological. And in the meantime, rich people seem to be above the fray. They're not suffering. They're not deprived of these things. So, yes, it creates an unreal situation, and the only response is a kind of impotent rage.
Our first caller is Ron in Milwaukee. Good morning, Ron.
Hi, good morning, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. As far as rage is concerned, I'm not sure if this is something new. I mean, we've seen, president assassinated in the history of this country. So rage is not a new phenomenon for this country. In my opinion, what's happening is I think the country is catching up to the financial realities. I mean, when it comes to liberals, I don't think the country has money to expand or introduce any new programs. When it comes to, the Republicans, I mean, one of the things that I'm really sad about the Republican Party is it's ending up becoming a party of, values and foreign interventions, and that itself takes some money. I think that's catching up with the people. First is we had, President Obama came into office. He had a Democratic Congress, Democratic Senate. That was supposed to take off the pressure, the tensions that we had in the last 8 years of President Bush, but nothing has changed. So that's where the real frustration is. There is hardly any difference when it comes to governance between the Democratic or the Republican Party. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. What do you make of that, Lee Siegel?
Well, I think that's so true. 8 years of Bush created an extraordinary smoldering rage, and not just smoldering, a flaming fury. Obama came in, and I also think Obama raised expectations. He allowed expectations to be raised to stratospheric levels, and then he sank well below them. And our politics again are dysfunctional, and it makes people very angry. At the same time, politics is becoming what I call existential politics. It seems to have more to do with the personal lives of our politicians than with public issues. And the public issues become things that that people are obsessed with in their private lives. Everything's reversed. We live publicly. We're obsessed with getting health care, with getting out of these foreign adventures, with rising debt, with expanding unemployment. The politicians seem only obsessed with the personal flaws of each other, and the media plays this up. The media also is a terrible culprit in this. The media is becoming more and more personal. So our public realm becomes more personal. The public issues don't go addressed. We become obsessed with them, and we can't change them, and we take it out on each other. But certainly, as the previous caller said, the utter dysfunctionality of our politics is one of the roots of our rage.
Didn't Tea Party-fueled anger result in a lot of change in the 2010 elections?
Absolutely. There's an example of how rage can be very effective in the political realm. It's not a development I was happy about, but I marveled at how effective it was. It did recall the 60s. A lot of people made that analogy. But of course, that anger has hit a dead end as it strangled the Republican Party, created deep divisions in that party, made that party the party of paralysis. So I think the Tea Party is an example of how limited rage is in the end. You can get angry and you can embody it and you can offer a catharsis to people, but once you get in the legislative realm, it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that President Obama, who you mentioned earlier, a lot of people criticize for not being angry enough, is now getting angry enough?
I think he's learning. I don't know how much of it is the pressure of a political campaign. He obviously wants to be president for a second term, but he certainly saying the things now that he ought to have said several years ago when, as a previous caller said, he came in with the Democratic Senate, the Democratic House. That whole summer of 2009 when he was trying to pass health care, and you had that Tea Party rebellion, and he just seemed to hide away in the White House. It made everyone despondent who wanted change in this country. And I think now he's catching on, and now his response to Paul Ryan's budget, you have this horrendous, if I may comment from another state on Wisconsin, you have this horrendous creature, Paul Ryan, who has a medieval cast of mind or 19th century cast of mind, and Obama rightly called it social Darwinism and was very fiery about it. And that's a kind of anger, a principled anger, a passion that I think pleases and gratifies many people.
Yeah, and Paul Ryan and other Republicans accuse President Obama of trying to ignite class warfare.
Well, as he does say, it's not class warfare. It's simply addressing economic realities. But if it were class warfare, so be it. What's wrong with that?
We are talking with Lee Siegel, contributor to The Daily Beast and many other publications. We're talking with him about a piece he wrote that appeared recently on The Daily Beast about cultural road rage. He says that cultural rage is everywhere, and the candidate that addresses this most effectively will win the election. And we wonder what you think or what questions you have. Do you also agree that cultural road rage is everywhere? And why do you think this is? Is there an answer to controlling this anger? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also send us an email, talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We will check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue taking your calls and your thoughts on cultural rage. You're in my face and I'm in yours, and there's no social movement or politics or legislation on earth that can do a damn thing about it. So writes our guest, Lee Siegel, in a recent piece on cultural road rage that appeared in The Daily Beast. Why is there so much anger in America today, and is there anything that would calm that anger? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, April the 9th. Our guest says in this piece that rage seems to be exploding everywhere in our culture, from anger at a conservative talk show host to a JetBlue pilot who loses it and snaps mid-flight to a presidential candidate who lashes out at the media. Where is all this anger coming from? And do you agree with our guest who says that it's the candidate that is able to most effectively address this anger that will win the election? Lee Siegel is a contributor to The Daily Beast, Harper's, The Nation, The New Republic, and The New York Times. He is also the author of the Amazon Kindle single, Harvard is Burning. And we had a listener named Dwayne who was on the line but couldn't wait through the newscast, who wanted to say that people are upset because he thinks the American dream is being threatened. He says all people want to be able to do is raise their kids, have a home, be happy, but so many of our jobs are going overseas, he says, and people don't feel like there's anything they can do about it. Lee Siegel, what do you think?
Absolutely. That's certainly one reason. The the American dream that really took root after the Second World War and that created this rising, powerful middle class that in turn created so much of all the good things in American life, the good institutions, culturally, politically. That's all gone now. You know, how did we go from in the 1950s, a top marginal tax rate of 94%, to quibbling now over any kind of tax revenue? Paul Ryan and other Republicans virtually don't want any taxes paid. How did we get there? How did we go from a time of full unemployment, rather full employment, to where we are now, to our jobs disappearing? Nobody can explain it. Nobody can solve it. Nobody offers any solution to it. We really do seem helpless, and yet we seem, there's this illusion of empowerment, as I said, through the internet, and people talk of transparency and access, and it's almost painful. It's almost like a painful travesty of our everyday experience to hear all this talk about transparency and access, because we don't see what's going on and we don't have access to anything.
We talked in our first half hour about the Tea Party anger that led to some changes in 2010, but as you said, doesn't seem to be as powerful now. What about the Occupy movement, the Occupy Wall Street movement?
Well, that seemed to be very hopeful in the beginning, but the problem they have is that they really haven't. At this point, I wrote at the time that they should keep themselves leaderless because the media would seize on a leader and reduce their movement to the leader's biography. But I think now they do need a leader or leaders. They need a face that Americans can recognize and a face that will embody their principles. They need principles. Nobody really knows what they want. I very much admire their anger, what I consider a principled anger. I think their grievances are the right ones, and I think they're saying the right things, but they need now to get organized, to get serious, to really sort of enter the political realm more officially, as it were, because I think the two-party system clearly is not working, and people are looking for a third party. Within the next 25 years, you will have a third party in this country, and I think the Occupy movement, though it will not become a third party, they really should start laying the groundwork for something like that. Mm-hmm.
Explain a little more, if you will, this line in your piece, "You're in my face, I'm in yours, and there is no social movement or politics or legislation on earth that can do a damn thing about it."
Well, we seem to bother each other more and more, I think. You hear about my son is in kindergarten, and he comes home and he discusses issues of, quote, personal space, unquote. I think that we have less tolerance for each other. I don't want to be dark on a beautiful spring morning in New Jersey. I don't know what it's like out there, but it's certainly springtime. But I recall something that D.H. Lawrence said in one of his more splenetic moments. He said, "The sympathetic bond is broken. We stink in each other's nostrils." I do think the sympathetic bond is broken for many of us. And these eruptions of murder, the recent one in Oklahoma that was just on your news program, the one a couple of weeks ago in California at that college, these things seem to happen more and more often. And they're extreme cases, extreme symptoms of an underlying malaise. And we just don't seem able to tolerate each other.
We have another comment. Susan on Facebook writes, "There's too much reality TV and people screaming at each other. If you watch the media, you might believe this is the new normal, that somehow people are morphing into theatrics instead of doing food boycotts, media blackouts, or other anti-consumerism means to send message to those in power about what they don't like." I guess she's saying that people are doing these things for good, but we don't really hear about them.
Well, she's absolutely right. Reality TV is like some kind of terrible virus. It's like the cultural version of the Ebola virus. And I think the media has greatly to blame for all this. The media is turning human experience into a freak show. And the media encourages rage, and it encourages what this listener called, I think she said, used the word theatrics. there's a theatrics of daily life where everything becomes unreal, where authentic impulses to change things, food boycotts or anything, are sort of brushed aside for the theatrics of violent behavior. And the media wants to cater to appetites, and the appetites become ever more jaded in this late consumerist capitalism, and so we get more and more extreme, desperate attempts on the part of the media to pander to our jaded appetites, and it's terribly distorting and deforming.
Well, we referred to this particular clip in our first half hour. This is Newt Gingrich. This was at one of the GOP debates earlier this year, lashing out at the media, and I'd like you to comment on this.
I think the destructive, vicious, negative nature of much of the news media makes it harder to govern this country, harder to attract decent people to run for public office. And I am appalled that you would begin a presidential debate on a topic like that.
Yeah, a lot of people in the audience agreeing with him on that.
I don't like Gingrich at all, but I had chills listening to that, because those are the absolutely right words in the absolutely wrong mouth. You know, he's no one to talk, and I think the media's exposure of his private life was apt and necessary. But I do think that those words in someone else's mouth, in an Obama's mouth, perhaps, or someone like that, would be very, very accurate and ring true. I think the media does practice personal destruction, the politics of personal destruction. Look at Anthony Weiner. What did he do? He tweeted a little bit, and he's gone. Look what they're doing to. Look what they did to John Edwards. He certainly messed up. He deserved to be punished in the way that he was. But come on, give the guy a break. He's been pilloried now, and he's still being burned in public. And we have this insatiable appetite for revenge on our public figures when we stumble. And so it's our fault. Also, everybody takes everything too personally. Everybody takes everything personally. I think that's one of the main problems in this country. It's so hard to rise above our own personal feelings to something grander. And people just can't be grand enough. And I think that's what's killing us.
Is the what has been dubbed by Democrats as the Republicans' war on women an example of the cultural rage?
Well, I think there's a universal war on women. I think the Democrats are getting in on it late in the game. I think all over the world there's a war on women, and I do think that in this country, yes, you're seeing that. It seems predictable, right? Women have become more empowered over the past 30, 40 years, and at a time of economic displacement and when men are feeling weakened, there is a rage against women and other groups of people, and I think the Republicans, which have long been the party of rage, are trying to connect with this. I think it's going to blow up in their faces, because they're simply going to lose the women's vote. But you can bet that Romney will come up with a female running mate, so they'll try to express rage against women and pretend to be sensitive to women at the same time.
Steve in Coon Valley is with us now. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
Yes.
I think a lot of the problem is everybody's just getting tired of the constant corruption and incompetency of all of our leaders, I mean, whether it's political or business. And the only way that the rage is going to start dying down is for these people to start showing some degree of competence and putting the interests of the country ahead of their own personal little petty problems and differences.
It's because of the incompetence of our and corruption of our leaders, Lee Siegel?
Well, I think that's true, but I think that what's lacking is simply courage. People again, our leaders can't get beyond their own interests, or in some cases, the interests of their local constituents, which is at odds with the national interest. They want to get obviously voted in again and again. They have politicians by definition. The modern democratic politician has a pathological need to be loved. We know people like that in our personal lives. Things don't work out. It's hard to have a relationship with them. You need figures who are able to operate with some degree of of self-surrender, even with some degree of altruism in the public realm. You need a kind of courage. I don't know if we're raising Americans to be like that, with surrounded by our violent media culture and our gadgets and all the rest of it. But here's where my political progressivism meets my cultural conservatism. I do think that the culture has become too accelerated. It's gone too far. It's encouraging our worst instincts, and it's not creating leaders. It's not creating people who can operate with some degree of disinterest in the public realm.
Yeah.
But it goes way beyond incompetence.
Well, as we wrap up, do you see this cultural rage going away anytime soon?
No, I think it's going to get much worse. I'm getting angry just talking about being angry.
I'm sorry about that. But do you see that either of the I'm saying Mitt Romney is the Republican front runner, but let's say he's the nominee. Do you see either of the presidential candidates making a difference?
Alas, no. I think this election will be the ugliest election in our lifetime. I think it's about the economy, but it's also clearly about race. And it's about one half of the country having a different vision of life than the other half of the country. And it has it's going to be at least a rhetorical Armageddon. It's going to bring out the worst of us. I do hope that after the election's over and all that clears, that we will have a decent government and maybe we'll have learned something. But I'm just not that hopeful when I read the paper and look at the news and see what's going on.
Well, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Lee Siegel is a contributor to The Daily Beast. His piece on cultural road rage is linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be partly to mostly sunny. There will be a slight chance of rain or snow in northern Wisconsin today. Highs ranging from the upper 30s in the north to the mid-50s in the south. A freeze warning has been posted for western and central Wisconsin for tonight, otherwise clear with widespread frost. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. That's only a test. It's time now for our Monday morning wake-up call. When a guest brings attention to an important issue that we may not be talking about just yet. Today, our wake-up call comes from Todd Pritchard. He is Wisconsin's Emergency Preparedness Coordinator. He says we need to be prepared for severe weather, which can and does strike in April. He joins us by telephone. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and I understand tomorrow is the anniversary of a pretty big tornado outbreak in Wisconsin. A year ago tomorrow, we had tornadoes.
Right. There was a major outbreak of tornadoes, the sixth biggest outbreak in state history, all across northern Wisconsin. And so they can happen. They can happen in any, really almost any month of the year in Wisconsin. But of course, right now we're getting into the teeth of tornado season, and we're really trying to get people to pay attention to this and do three things, Joy, and it really just comes down to three things: listen, act, and live. Listen to the watches and the warnings when they get issued, and act. You know, do something. Find the best shelter you can immediately, and you've got a much better chance of survival.
Yeah. Do you, you did get out a news release last week, about the fact that severe weather can soon be upon us. You actually have a tornado and severe weather awareness week set for next week.
Right, exactly. It's April 16th through the 20th with a statewide tornado drill on April 19th, on that Thursday. And that's a really significant one, too, Joy, because what's happening is, for the first time ever in state history, all the broadcasters, radio, television, cable television, they're all going to be participating in the drill. So there's going to be a mock watch that's issued at 1 o'clock, and then a mock tornado warning for the entire state at 1:45. And of course, traditionally, a lot of schools take part in that drill, businesses. But this is a great time for families to think about, you know, what would we do when there's a tornado watch or warning? How do we act and where do we go? And I think it's great that the broadcasters are participating this year.
Yeah, so what should the general public do when they hear those sirens go off for this test on the 19th?
Well, I think on the 19th, the best thing to do is to think about where you would go and what you would do. You know, getting to your basement, obviously, is still the best place to go if you have a basement. And getting underneath something, a table, a desk, something that will give you some protection from debris that might be falling on you. If you don't have a basement, interior to your house, you know, get inside as much as you can and get as low as you can. And again, if you can get something above you to you know, break any kind of debris that's falling, even if it's a mattress or some blankets or pillows, something that'll help you know, buffer you would be great.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, tornadoes. That's probably the one thing that that really, really scares me. I'm not yeah. afraid of a lot of things, but those tornadoes are nasty. They mean business. And when I saw the tornadoes that hit Dallas-Fort Worth last week, and we saw those Schneider truck trailers,
yeah. yep.
they were being tossed like toys, flying through the air, and they weigh tons, apparently. And it's like, what in the world? It's a miracle. Nobody was killed in those tornadoes.
It is, and early warnings really helped. You know, they knew those storms were coming. But I think, Joy, one thing to talk about too is I always think back to last year in the Joplin, Missouri tornadoes. You know, it was May 22nd, and one of the deadliest tornadoes in U.S. history struck that town. Joplin is about the size of Janesville. It's a little bit bigger than Wausau, to give you some perspective. But it was an EF5. That was like as big a tornado as they come. 200-mile-an-hour winds went tearing through that town. 161 people were killed. And, it was a tragedy. But one of the things that came out of that was a psychological study that the National Weather Service did. And there were really two major takeaways from that. One was that the majority of people who heard the initial warnings did not do anything immediately. They did not immediately go for shelter. And the other takeaway, Joy, was that people needed between 2 and 9 confirmations of that risk before they did anything. So, for example, if you heard the a warning on the radio and folks were saying, you know, there's a tornado headed to town, what did people do? We're all human, right? So what do? We go outside and we look up in the sky, right? And then maybe we go inside and try to see, well, what are they doing on television? And, well, maybe I'll call a friend, or maybe I'll go on Facebook and start, you know, emailing people. You know, those seconds ticking away where you're trying to reconfirm information that you already know can cost lives. So what we're really urging people to do is think about what are your trusted sources of information. You know, and when you hear that there is a tornado, the, you know, risk of one coming toward you, you know, don't try to spend time reconfirming stuff you already know. Get to the basement. And one of the best tools still, Joy, is that emergency weather radio, a NOAA weather radio that can alert you to tornado risks immediately. It's like having a siren right in your own home, and you can buy them at pretty much any store in Wisconsin.
Good idea. Listen, act, and live. Todd, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy. Thank you so much.
Todd Pritchard, Wisconsin Emergency Management's Emergency Preparedness Coordinator. The website is readywisconsin.wi.gov. And we thank him for issuing today's wake-up call. Be prepared for severe weather. Tornadoes can and do happen in April. The Tornado Severe Weather Awareness Week is next week in Wisconsin. By the way, there's another wake-up call here from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and the National Weather Service. They have put most of the state under a red flag warning, meaning there is a high risk for forest fires. Burn restrictions have been put in place for nearly all of Wisconsin. So Do take care. Don't start any fires. And use caution in all outdoor activities. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.